In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddy.
Welcome to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 135. I still marvel that we've actually done that. John Senecal, and we have a special guest today. His name is BJ Fennell. BJ Fennell is like a name he should have been like a second baseman for Minnesota.
And now starting for the Toledo Mudhens, left-handed second baseman, BJ Fennell.
A light-hitting hustler.
It's a good baseball name.
It is.
I told Jerry Brooks once, you know, I'm a grinder. You know, you're playing hockey, you need somebody to go into the corner and get the puck. That's me. I'm a grinder.
Listen, BJ, the connection is, there's multiple, but BJ hired me in my first full-time TV job in Connecticut. And he, obviously, John Senecal, and worked for BJ when he was the news director at NBC
Connecticut. And BJ hired me in my current job in television.
Yeah, at Fox 61.
You were twice blessed, I guess, right?
But I mean, I honestly credit, you know, BJ for help launching my career, and look where I am now.
Full circle.
Full circle. Yeah, well, look where I am now.
And obviously, John had a great run on the news side and now is on the promo side for the local Fox affiliate.
Hey, listen, talent rises to the top, whether it's you, Brian, or you, John. Now, let's face it. That's, yes, I hired both of you, but it was an easy call. All three times. You once and John twice. Easy call.
When you go back to it, though, you don't think about it then. Like, I hate to be like, we're old and you're younger, but you always think there's other opportunities, A and B. You don't realize that if I actually viewed work then as now, it would have been way better. Is that if someone's not, no matter how good you are, if someone doesn't want to work alongside you, they're not going to hire you. And like, I used to get worked up about answers for this or that, but you just have to, I tell my kids, just be yourself. And if they like you, then great. And if they don't, then you know. And that's what work is. Work isn't just about your resume, really. It's about whether, like, can I sit next to this jackass every day?
Right.
Picture that in the news car. Picture sitting in a vehicle all day with someone. If you're, can I sit next to this jackass all day?
Yeah.
Picture that, right? And that happens, right? Like, if you have 18 photographers and 18 or 16 reporters, that's 18 pairings you got that have to work together.
Right.
One of those 18 is not going to get along statistically.
Right. Many years ago, I worked at a television station. My two anchors couldn't stand each other, and I had to tell them both, it's okay if you don't like each other, but boy, you got to get along. You got to pretend that you like each other. Yeah. Otherwise, that's just not going to work.
I had a dynamic.
How do you handle that, though? That is cannot
as
be
as a manager
easy.
Or in the moment?
Just in general. Like, as a manager, A, but B, like, how, like, there's, like, no way that that's going to translate authentically through television.
Well,
like, if you can pull that off as two people and authentically portray that, you actually get along on television?
I would say two things. I want to hear what you have to say, but I'll say I had one particular instance. I don't want to name that person's name, where it did not work out. It was terrible. And two things were true, and it was bizarre. One is I let it get the better of me, and I said some things I shouldn't have on the air.
Whoops.
But number two, like, people thought we were sleeping together, like viewers. Like, so it was weird because—
Right. You're like, I can't stand this person. But people
but
think
some people
we're...
are like, yeah, like— So I don't know the answer to that, but I mean, I will tell you, from a working environment, there's nothing worse than going to work every day and not getting along well with someone who you spend more time.
Oh, you do not have to tell me that, man. You do not have to tell me that.
What are you going
to
say?
I was just going to say that you try to appeal to them professionally, and if that doesn't work, maybe you have to make a change. In this particular situation, you know, I hate to say it, but it was a bit of a gift. One of the anchors had a severe back problem. Had a leave, took a leave, and
why
never
you take some time off.
Yeah, no, never came back.
Get out.
Never came back, and I felt terrible about it.
But problem
and
solved.
This anchor company came cheese, to visit though. Me. Company
but,
cheese.
You know, it's funny. This anchor came to visit me many years later in a different city, and we had a great conversation. We had lunch the whole bit. So, and it was like, how did I get? And I hate to say, I was lucky because this poor person was suffering with this terrible back pain. Terrible back pain.
Is that what made that person miserable to work with?
Was the maybe. Pain? There's a great question. I never asked that question. Maybe I should have.
Back pain's the worst.
Oh, terrible.
Look at you old guys. let's talk a little baseball. I didn't know BJ was a big Yankee fan. I think it's a bunch of bull crap. You're like, why don't we have BJ on the podcast? I'm like, whatever. He's like, he's got a lot of good stories. I was like, I assumed you were a Red Sox fan. I just did.
Well, there's a long story. I'll try to give you the somewhat shortened version of it. I grew up in Fairfield, Connecticut.
Right, which is Mason-Dixon line.
It is,
right?
Mason-Dixon line, but the television market was New York, and that we'll talk about that in a second. That had a great influence. I awoke to baseball in 1967. I have no recollection of the 1966 baseball season other than a set of cards I had depicting the 1966 World Series when the Orioles swept the Dodgers. That's it. So I overnight woke up to baseball. And what a year to wake up to baseball. Yeah. The impossible dream. And my father was a big Red Sox fan, and we didn't watch a lot of games, but boy, we listened to a lot of games on the radio. Because down in Connecticut, in Fairfield anyway, it's part of the New York market, so I never got Channel 38, right. Ever. Couldn't get Channel 3. We had, you know, what we called fuzz vision. If the Giants were blacked out, we'd turn the antenna around and try to get WTIC in Hartford, the TV station, which is now WFSB. So they are in the World Series. I am all wrapped up in it. Game 7, George Scott strikes out to end the World Series. I'm devastated. I kick over a coffee table and I lock myself in the bathroom. All right. And I think something happened. And my mother is, oh, BJ, come out. It's all right. It's just a baseball game. And I'm, what do you mean? It's just a baseball game.
Not just a baseball game.
The Red Sox just lost the World Series. What do you mean? Just a baseball game. And I don't know. Something happened in there. And maybe I thought to myself, never again. Never again. But the following year, I had tickets. My father got tickets to go see the Yankees play the Red Sox at Yankee Stadium. Thrilled. I'm going to go watch my beloved Red Sox. Game gets rained out. We go to the stadium. We're waiting. Rained out. So we got a rain check. But he couldn't make the schedule work for another Red Sox game, so they played the California Angels. So we go to see the Angels play. My father, what a good guy, because that's the last thing he probably wanted to do, because he was such a huge Red Sox fan, as were and are my brother and my sister. So we go see the Yankees play the Angels. I walk in behind home plate. We're walking out to our seats in right field, and who do I see taking grounders at first base? Steven, guess. Who's taking grounders at first base? 1968.
Not Mickey Mantle.
Yes, Mickey Mantle.
Get out.
So I see Mickey Mantle. It's like, wow. I look up and I see the facade of Yankee Stadium that we always call the upside down fence. Looks like an upside down fence. Green grass, upside down fence. Mickey Mantle. And it gets better. In between innings, when the outfielders are throwing, you know, the center fielder's having a game of catch with the right fielder, Andy Kosko, right fielder for the Yankees that day, after he's done having catch, he takes the ball and he throws it in the right field stance. Not all that close to where I am, but I'm like, oh my God, upside down fence. Blue sky, green grass, Mickey Mantle, and they're throwing balls into the stands. This is the craziest thing ever. But then the pièce de résistance, right? We're watching the game, and my sister gets hit in the back with an egg. Somebody brought an egg in? Somebody brought it. It's 1968. People brought all kinds of stuff into Yankee Stadium.
To throw it at the players?
Probably at the players. And he came up a little short and he hit my sister instead. Of course, my father, my brother, oh, this is terrible. I'm like, I was 10, she was 14. And I love my sister, but you know the dynamic of that age difference. And I thought to myself, this is the greatest day of my life. I mean, think about it. Upside down fence, Mickey Mantle, green grass, blue sky, Andy Kosko, and my sister gets hit by an egg. I will be a New York Yankees fan for the rest of my life. And of course, all the games were on PIX 11.
Yeah.
Road games mostly. The Red Sox weren't on TV, so I got sucked in. That's how I learned the national anthem, from watching Red Sox game. You know, up through third grade at Roger Sherman Elementary in Fairfield, we always sang, My Country, Tis of Thee. And we had to sing something called the Stars, Bangled, Stanner, something. I don't know. So in fourth grade, I needed to learn how to sing the Star Spangled Banner, and I was terrified by it. But I watched so many baseball games where back then the broadcast would include either Gene Jarvis on the organ at Shea Stadium, or, you know, Robert Merrill singing at Yankee Stadium. That's how I learned the Star Spangled Banner. So I was a Yankees fan for life. And years later, when I met this beautiful young woman at UConn, the Yankees rose up again and made a difference in my life. We can tell that story in a little bit, or perhaps in another episode.
Well, I'm just curious, because I wonder if it was media manufactured or real, but in 67, so it would have been basically 50 years since the Red Sox had last won it. Was the curse of the Bambino discussed then, or is that what a modern creation after 86?
It may have been from 86. I don't really remember. You know, the Red Sox hadn't been in the World Series in, I think, 21 years. It had been since 1946, so it meant nothing to me. I was just wrapped up in the actual excitement. Oh, my God, there's baseball. The Red Sox. My father is, you know, screaming at the radio, this is so much fun. I can't believe it. And the Red Sox won the pennant, like, in the last weekend.
Right.
Last day, I think. We'd have to look it up. But I think, you know, Detroit beat the Angels or something, and the Red Sox got in or something crazy like that. So no, we didn't talk a lot about that, but you know, they had Jess Kane at WHDH had written a song, Carl Yastrzemski. Remember that song? Carl Yastrzemski, the man they call you.
No.
I love him. Oh, come
no.
on.
No.
You don't have that?
I remember No Ma number 5.
Oh, come on. Carl, you know, the state of Maine is going quite insane, and on Cape Cod,
okay,
they're called
dating,
a holiday.
You're dating yourself
from
now.
From every state, they sit and wait to see Yastrzemski at home.
I'm still amazed that
he
kicked over a coffee table at 9 years old and didn't get in trouble for it.
Well... A very understanding parents.
If it was TikTok back then, it would be like the equivalent of smashing your big screen, right?
Seriously, I would probably get in some trouble.
Coffee table survived, though. I will say that. It did. I was only 9 years old. I kicked over a coffee table. Big deal.
But I think generally, I think John's the biggest fan I know, but I think that baseball meant more then. You know, it just was a more important sport to the culture. And I think part of it is media. Like, if you're out gardening, you're listening to the game on the radio. If you're doing the dishes, you're listening to the game on the radio. And it was it still is the best radio game, but just people don't consume anything that way anymore. I actually think radio's arc is kind of mirrors baseball a little bit in the sense that it just was for a time when there was fewer things going on.
It's a shame, though, because listening to baseball on the radio is awesome. It still is. It really is because, I mean, as much as it's great to watch, you know, all the K-Zone and all that, there's such a different feel for listening to the game on the radio. It's just, it takes you to a totally different place. And I still do it. I mean, not if I'm at my house or whatever. Obviously, if I'm driving or if I'm out walking or whatever, I'll listen
to it.
My
dad would turn off the TV announcers and put on the radio guys.
But that was the problem now. Everything's on a delay so much now because it's going through all these different apps and everything, so you can never get it perfect. You know,
right.
A lot of times I would do the same thing with the Yankees before all the apps and everything, and we would listen to the radio broadcast and watch it on TV. But that's not as easy to do anymore.
And we are lucky that I think historically and even now we've been blessed with some great play-by-play people. I mean, you know, Joe Castiglione, I'm not a Red Sox fan, but I am a fan of his. And, of course, John and Susan. Doesn't get any better than John and Susan. And, you know, John Sterling.
I think it does.
That's you. Well, that's another thing, and I can understand that. Is John Sterling an unabashed, unapologetic homer? Yes. But listen carefully. He gives the opponents their due. He always does.
Yeah.
He doesn't. I mean, there are some announcers when the opposing team, when there's a fly ball to deep left field, and it's a home run, they win the World Series. Let's call, you know, final score, let's go to a break. But not John Sterling. He'll give it its due. Same with Joe Castiglione. They're professional. Yes, they're rooting for their teams, as they should be, but they're real pros, and I love listening to both of them. I really do.
Really? Because, again, I don't know if there's an unconscious sexist bias within me. I don't know, but she grates on me. I don't enjoy...
It's because she has a Boston accent, and she's calling Yankees games, and that drives you crazy. It drives you mentally crazy.
I love Castiglione because he does two things that golfers and baseball people do. One is he can remember like what count it was in 1989 when it's like, I am amazed at the recall of baseball players and golfers because it can be like on the seventh tee, I used a 5-iron, it was a little windy, and baseball, and the Castiglione has that, even though he's past, his fastball is definitely in the low 80s now, but with his age. But I think he has that knack, and that's what I love. And maybe Sterling has it because I haven't really listened to him enough to really be like that.
I like the new Red Sox announcer, Will. What's his last name? I forgot.
Oh, I can't stand him.
You don't like him?
Will
I think
Fleming.
He's good. Will Fleming. I like Will Fleming. You don't like him? I think he's good. He's got a nice voice and the pace. You know, calling baseball, I did some of it in college, and I did one New Britain Rockets game many years ago, one game. And that's tough because you can't get ahead of the game, and it's all about the pace. And don't be totally afraid of the dead air. And I'll tell one story. When I was sports director at WHUS, I was calling a baseball game UConn was playing. And again, these games were played in front of family and friends.
Right.
And I was always big into crowd noise. You know, here's a fly ball, deep left field, high, far, gone, crowd noise, right? So UConn's player, Al Garay, he hits a grand slam. Fly ball hit the deep left field, and it's out of here. It's a grand slam. Pause for crowd noise. Nice hit, Al. That's the crowd noise. But, oh well, I tried.
That's funny. He's BJ Fennell, along with John Senecal and Brian Shackman. This is Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. So how did you find, you just like sitting next to each other at work and the Yankees come up? Like, how does that?
Well, that's the interesting thing about sports, right? Somehow it always comes up in conversation. And and when you live in New England, it comes up very quick if you're a Yankees or a Red Sox fan, pretty much. Especially if you're a guy, right? And you're talking in general. So the great thing about sports is, if you do have that in common, it's something no matter what, right? If the Yankees suck, you're going to talk about it. If the Yankees are good, you're going to talk about it. Same thing with the Red Sox, right? So there's always that common interest. Now, same thing of you and I, Brian. If you're a Red Sox fan and I'm a Yankees fan, there's going to be that common interest, but it might not be so common that we like it, right? But there's that, right? So there's always going to be some sort of interaction. And that's what's great about sports. I mean, yeah, you get heated and everything, but it doesn't have to end in beating the crap out of someone in a parking lot all the time. But, you know, that's what I love about it.
Absolutely. And sometimes I disappoint myself because I can feel physically ill if the Yankees lose.
Still?
Yeah, it's like, and I also
Or now that the kids have flown the coop, now you're back to the Yankees.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Why would it affect me? And, you know, JB, if she's listening to this right now, will say, yep, sure does affect him. And I'm not one of those crazy fans that, like, smashes the television. But I genuinely don't. I'm very unhappy if the Yankees lose, especially if they lose to the Red Sox. You know, this past season was disappointing for all of us. I called it a race to the bottom. Who's going to finish first? The Red Sox or the Yankees? And the Red Sox pulled through. They finished ahead of the Yankees in the race to the bottom. I was very happy about that.
I would have considered the season like almost a success if they had finished ahead of the Yankees in the standings.
We feel the same way.
But
isn't
I think they also, I think they beat them in the season series, the Red Sox.
Yeah, but
overall, they finished, but they didn't finish. Yeah, they finished
the
last.
Yankees played well at the end. So you do. That was sort of my question. Was like you do care about it still.
I do.
It might not be the childhood romance, but you still care.
Correct. I have not kicked over a coffee table since October 1967. So I can assure you of that.
That's really funny.
Yeah, I've never burned or broken or done anything like that. I've had a roommate
once. What's the worst thing you ever did?
Oh, just yell and scream.
Never punched a window or kicked the dog.
Nope. It's not. It honestly, dude, it's not worth it. I mean, what's the point, right? I remember in '96, I was in college, and the Yankees went down 2-0 to the Braves. And my college roommate, we had lived off campus, and he was from New York. I mean, like, into the Yankees, like super into the Yankees. He went out and burned like three of his Yankees jerseys in the front yard.
That is so dumb.
And they went down. Exactly. And then they came back and won the damn World Series.
Yeah.
So it's like, either way, if they didn't win the World Series, it's still dumb. But, like, you know, that's the same thing. People throwing their coffee table through their big screen TV or whatever. Or, you know, like, oh, the Cowboys lost again. Oh, I'm going to break my big screen again this year. So it's like, what are you doing?
And I think baseball also teaches you about the ups and downs of life, because there are 162 games a year and nobody wins every year, right? So we, you know, the Yankees fans, I mean, and I didn't jump on a bandwagon when I started rooting for the Yankees in 1968. They weren't very good. These were the Horace Clark years. So I certainly wasn't on a bandwagon. And then when they started to get good, it was like, this is amazing. Well, the Yankees, you know, in 76, they win the pennant. I do have a good story about opening day, by the way, the new Yankee Stadium. And disappointing when they got swept. You know, the Chambliss home run that got them in the series was great, but, you know, they got swept by the Reds. And then they went in 77 and 78. And that was just magical. It was great. It was great.
I when I think about the Yankees and Yankee Stadium, I never have been to the new one. I remember we covered, I don't remember if it was you or it might have been Dan Lee. I remember
Subway Series? No, that was before.
I think it might have been even 02. It was a year that, who's the guy you can't stand?
Pavano?
Yeah, it was Pavano.
2003.
And
they lost to the Marlins.
Yeah, so Pavano was with the Marlins. So I interviewed his mom on the field, and she was a piece of work and just ripping the Yankees to shreds.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, purposely sitting on inside the dugout, just because I wanted to say I sat in the dugout of Yankee Stadium. And the place was a dump, just like Fenway. I mean, old pipes and stuff wasn't painted, this and that. But, like, the new one, I mean, I guess you love it, but all I do is see those empty pleather seats behind home plate, and it just seems...
Yeah, well, I think that's a trend across baseball, right? If you're gonna get corporate sponsors that don't know anything about the sport, and you're going to charge $8,000 for a seat, who's going to show up?
I've saved some ticket stubs over the years, and box seats back when I was a kid at Yankee Stadium were
$4. Yeah.
I also saved my NLCS ticket from that famous game in 1973, 50 years ago, when Bud Harrelson and Pete Rose got into it at second base.
Wow.
One of the craziest events I've ever seen in person in my life. I think that was, those tickets were probably like $15 for an NLCS game in 1973. So yeah, it's too bad. A lot of people get priced out of it, and you wonder why. My God, we just had the lowest rated World Series in history. Why is that? Well, there's so many other choices, for one thing, in life and in viewing.
And nobody cares about those two teams.
Right.
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, they're not big market teams.
Well, but they're decent market teams. Dallas and Phoenix, decent. No, it's not New York, LA, Chicago. I got that. Or Boston.
But they're not baseball markets.
No, they're not.
I'm saying.
They're not. And I mean, maybe that's, I don't know. Would we ever get sick of seeing the Yankees in the World Series every year? Probably not. Maybe.
We do. John and I have talked about this. I do think that if you don't have Chicago, LA, Boston, Philly, it's a real problem in baseball. But attendance was up this year.
But it's also, I mean, those teams are the teams that usually have the star potential too. Right. And that's what draws. I mean, if you don't have those star players, I mean, listen, how many people that are going to just casually tune into the World Series are going to know who Corbin Carroll is, even though he's putting on one of the best rookie years in baseball, right? Right. Who even knows who that is? Who knows who Josh Young is? Who even knows who Marcus Semien is?
Yeah.
Like, nobody. But everybody can tell you who Shohei Ohtani is or Aaron Judge.
Right.
Right?
It's been baseball's problem for a while, though. It's like, you knew Ken Griffey, but you didn't know a bunch of other people. Like,
right. Well, it's an individual sport. It really is. It's pitcher against batter. It's, I think, less a team sport than just about any other sport. It's just, I've got a bat, you got a ball, and it's you against me. That's it. That's how every play starts.
The way I've always described it is that you can be the most selfish person on the planet and be a great teammate, because if you all you care about is hitting, and you hit well, you help the team. Like, there's a weird the selfish element and team combined in a way that it doesn't for other sports. It's totally unique. Before we wrap things up, we got BJ Fennell and John Senecal on Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. You teased two stories.
Okay. Thank you for reminding me which two.
Well, there was something about
opening day.
First day in the new stadium, and there's another one about something else, but give us another one of your classics to say goodbye to.
Okay, when the Yankee Stadium reopened, and I did go to Yankees games at Shea Stadium in 1974 and 75.
So you went to the actual first game or the two exhibition games with the Cubs before?
I went to the, well, good for you. Well,
I was at the first one where it was raining against the Cubs.
Good lad, good lad. Opening day, the real thing, against the Twins. So my father, our neighbor, Nip Noble and his son Tally, my best friend, who would go on to play shortstop for the last UConn team to play in the College World Series, Tally Noble.
And what year was that?
That was 1976. We had tickets to go
it's
to the game.
Name, a good baseball name, too.
1976 was the last time UConn was in the College World Series.
No, 79.
79.
Again, we were in high school in 76, and then I went to UConn. Tally is 2 years younger than I. Then he would go to UConn to play baseball, and I was the sports director at WHUS calling games with Tally Noble on the field, my childhood friend, you know, one of my best friends to this day. So that's the side story
that's
there.
That's crazy. Think how long that's been in UConn baseball.
They've been close. They've been close. They got to the regionals. And
yep. Absolutely.
We'll get there.
We're driving to the game. Nip Noble is driving. His car breaks down, so we have to get towed the whole bit. They can't fit us all in the front of the truck. So Tally and I are in the back seat of the car being towed to Norwalk to some auto mechanic. They get the car running. We finally resume our trip to Yankee Stadium. The trivia question is, who hit the first home run at the new Yankee Stadium in 1976? And the answer is Dan Ford of the Twins. And you ask me, was I there? No, I had a ticket. I wasn't there yet. Right. We got there and I don't know, the third inning and the Yankees won. I think Oscar Gamble hit a home run or whatever. So, yes, I was there, but we were late. The other Yankee story was that goes back to a few years later. I was sitting eating lunch in Brian McMahon Hall at the University of Connecticut, minding my own business. And this beautiful Mediterranean dish walks by. And I think, oh, my God, who's that? I'm not allowed to use her full name in podcasts, so that's JB. She's my girlfriend's roommate, a friend of mine tells me. So I arranged a one-way blind date, and the rest is history. In between then, somebody had left a Yankees hat on my floor in McMahon. I picked it up. I said, whose hat is this? Oh, that's JB's. I said, oh, really? Maybe I'll go upstairs and give it to her. So I put it on my head. I walk into her room and I say, is somebody missing a Yankees cat? She thought I was taunting her. She thought I was a Red Sox fan.
Man.
So she looks at me with fire in her eyes. I have never seen eyes like this before, right? She rips it off my hat because she thinks I was taunting
her. You're mocking her.
Yes, yeah. And there I slink away, tail between my legs.
Yes, damn, I love this
walking
woman.
Down with my head down as I return to the third floor.
She's the
south.
One.
And it finally hit me. That's the girl I'm going to marry. And I did.
What year was that?
That was 1978.
No, but in college. Like,
college.
Where were you?
78. I was a junior. She was a sophomore. And we got married in 1982. And the rest is history.
Wow.
So you're talking about the Yankee Stadium in 76. I was talking about 2009, obviously.
Right, 2009.
76,
no,
I was just a ye lad. I was one.
Yeah, I went to my first game at the new Yankee Stadium this past summer. And boy, it was great. It was comfortable. The weather was perfect. They beat the Astros one of the few times that they did. It was a great day. I really enjoyed it. And I thought, geez, why did I wait so long to come here?
How do you get down there when you go?
What, I mean, I usually drive.
All the way?
Usually all the way. I mean, a few times a while ago.
That's right, because you don't drink either.
We take the kids and we take the train because they, you know, let the kids go on the train and do all that stuff. So we did that a couple of times. But usually I would drive down. Even before when I would drink, we would go down and, you know, tailgate in the parking lot and then go in and then obviously drive back home, you know.
My father was... must have been related to Amerigo Vespucci because we took every possible way from Fairfield. He went every way. We even parked in Woodland once and took the train down, the subway down.
Does the Fairfield train stop at 125?
Well, yeah. Well, back then, I don't really remember if it did. Now, there's like a Yankees Express that I think goes to—
back in the day, you used to jump up at Harlem and switch over.
Does it go to Grand Central or does it go to—
Yankees Express drops you right at the, you know, the stadium exit. And you can get off
Metro North?
Isn't it 125th Street?
Yeah, there's a Metro North that will take.
Yeah,
the
games. So it's easy. Now, when I went this past summer, I was staying with my cousin in Lower Manhattan. So we just got on the subway right to the stadium. Piece of cake. Game over, get on the subway, go back down to Lower Manhattan. Piece of cake. So because parking, God knows, how much does it cost to park there now?
Oh, my God. It's like $40 probably just for those regular, you know, lots that you would walk from.
Well, why would you want to park close to that anyway? Because then you got to wait to get out, right?
I mean, driving in out of Yankee Stadium is awful.
Such old guy talk.
It's awful.
But what stadium is good? I went to the Dodger Stadium this fall with my daughter, and it's got like thousands of parking spots. And I entered through some side street that was like— housing.
Yeah.
And like there were four different lanes that funneled into this urban street.
And not anyone directing traffic, right?
No.
Always blows my mind. Why? You go into New York, all right? It's chaos, right? And you drive in there and there's 8,000 cops standing around, like talking or doing whatever. Can you take like a quarter of them, throw a vest on them and have them do some traffic and like—
But it all works out in the end. Everyone gets to their spots. They're like, why bother?
Right.
Why waste my energy on
chaos.
You people?
It's funny you say that, Brian, because the worst traffic jam I've ever been in my life was getting out of Dodger Stadium. But there was an accident, I think, on the 5 or whatever the highway was. Ugh. So it took us forever, but it really had little to do with the traffic inside the stadium, more for an accident outside.
It's funny. My sister's lived out there for 25 years. And I don't think I could ever do it. I don't think as great as the weather is, I don't think I could live
traffic
out there.
Traffic sucks, dude. anyway, you slice. I mean, Connecticut sucks for traffic too, but it's nothing like what they deal with in LA. I mean, you're like, you could do a 3-mile commute, could take an hour.
Well, they got 6 lanes on each side and there's still traffic.
And nobody's
still
moving.
Not enough. Yeah. Right.
It's
right.
Crazy. BJ, it's great to see you.
Great to see you, Brian. Great to see you, John.
Yeah.
It's, I just didn't know he was a Yankee fan, which changes things a little bit, but. You've been listening to episode 135 of Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.